Production. You get to the club, you wanna turn the tape off. You wanna turn the tape off. You wanna turn the tape off. When we up in the club, all eyes on us. All eyes on us. All eyes on us. See the boys in the club, they watching us. They watching us. They watching us. Everybody on the club, all eyes on us. All eyes on us.
I'm your host, Steve Lewis, and we're back again this week. For the next hour, you will be zoned in for fitness. Today's guest is Mr. Keith Johnson, personal trainer from Sherrillville, Indiana. And we've been talking the last couple of weeks about weight loss and a program for it. It's a five-part series, and this week is our third week of it. Today we're actually going to start off talking about planning the exercises. That's, you know, planning what exercise that you need to incorporate in your weight loss plan. But before we begin, I want to go back over some of the stuff that we talked about last week. But I want to bring in Mr. Keith Johnson here. Keith, how you doing? Are you there?
Good, Steve. Stevie, I'm here. I'm glad you had me back on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. We had a good week, a good time last week. I went back over some of the notes, and then I actually went back and heard the broadcast again to get a lot of the stuff out of it. What you were saying about many of the things as far as the diet, you know, is a lot of things. When you incorporate those into your normal lifestyle, it makes it easier to maintain your weight. But now, when talking about, you know, just planning the stuff out, I think that's where people have a problem. So, but to go back over what we did last week, we basically said, you know, you need to create a food journal. Several reasons for that. You know, one is accountability. You know, it's something there. You can go back and look, you know, to see what you're actually eating as opposed to what you should be eating, so on and so forth. And with you being a personal trainer, it's easy for you to go back and say, hey, these are the adjustments that you need to make. So if somebody's doing it on their own or they got a personal trainer, you need that food journal. You need to be able to look at what you're actually doing. And in that case, then you'll know what modifications to make. Now, everybody is not a personal trainer. They're not a doctor. That's why they're listening to this show, so you can get some ideas on what they need to do. Now, Keith, last week you were mentioning that the nutrient balance, like in terms of, you know, the ratio of carbohydrates to proteins to fats, you said should be 40-30-30. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, yes, Steve, I'd be glad to. 40-30-30, that split is, you know, 40% protein, 30% carbs, and 30% fat. Overall, I think that's just a healthy ratio of proteins, carbs, to fats. I mean, we have many different diets out there today on the, you know, fad diets such as, you know, the Atkins diet or the Mediterranean diet or the Paleo diet, but they all have a catch to them. They all eliminate something completely. Where all that I'm trying to tell everybody to do is, you know, get 40% of your calories from protein, 30% from carbs, and 30% from fat. For one, I think you're going to mainly focus on getting that protein in. And two, you're not eliminating macronutrients. You know, our bodies need carbohydrates. Our bodies need fat along with the protein. So it is important to take in all three macronutrients, whereas some of the other diets that are out there these days, they make you eliminate things. And being on a diet is a lifestyle. It shouldn't be a diet where you eliminate things for the rest of your life. So with the 40-30-30, you're able to still enjoy some of the things you like coming from clean carbs or fats while taking in your proteins from your meats and eggs and dairy products. But that's my main reason for that. And I also believe that it's just healthy to go along with, you know, not eliminating everything. It's going to keep, you know, your triglycerides in order. You're going to still have glycogen in the muscle and your liver, and you're not going to go into a state of ketosis from the extremely low carbs that go along with a typical Atkins diet. That's my main reasons for the 40-30-30 ratio of proteins to carbs to fats.
Okay. And now, so, you know, because like on the Atkins, you know, they pretty much want you to eliminate the carbohydrates here. So, and in that case, you know, when I'm thinking, and if I'm not on a diet, when I'm hearing carbohydrates, I'm thinking French fries, I'm thinking potato chips, you know, ice cream, cookie, cakes. Now, okay, but you threw out a term there. You said clean carbs. So what would be the difference here? I mean, because, you know, Atkins is saying get rid of this stuff, and you're saying clean carbs, which means I'm thinking maybe what I just described might be like dirty carbs or something, or not what you're thinking.
You just described a good cheat day, you know, full of cookies and sugary carbs and those fatty ones that I really like. But when I'm talking about clean carbohydrates, I'm talking about, you know, your sweet potatoes, your brown rice, your fibrous vegetables that we talked about last week. Those are the clean carbohydrates that I'm talking about. Certain breads are okay. Ezekiel bread, which is a whole sprouted grain bread. Things of those matters are what I consider a clean carbohydrate. The difference is, you know, they're just healthier. They're mainly just carbs. They're not going to bring along a lot of fat with them. They're not really processed. A lot of these things are coming from the ground, and I'm a big believer in that also. Just, you know, if it comes from the earth, it's probably pretty good for you.
Okay, plant-based is basically what you're kind of saying. Okay.
Yes.
And not processed, so that's what you're... Okay.
Not processed, that's a big one right there.
Okay.
Because you're not getting all those preservatives, and who knows how they're genetically modifying some of these things we're taking in.
Yeah, we just did a show the other week talking about, the naked juice, and, you know, that was, you know, the fact that we thought it was organic, but it wasn't. So, I mean, yeah, who
did
they...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, putting formaldehyde inside the product, so yeah. Now, so that ratio goes toward, you know, what your calorie requirement is going to be, right? So, and we had talked about that last week, whereby, you know, you look at your lean body weight and then you look at your calorie requirement. So I just, you know, if we can just review that just one more time, what you were saying the calorie requirement should be.
Well, for a couple things, you know, I think for a good weight loss total, calories should be based around your lean body weight times by 12 calories per pound. So roughly, if you weigh 200 pounds, you're going to take that, multiply it by 12, and you're going to get 2,400 calories, and that should be how you get your 40%. So you'd multiply 2,400 by 0.4. That'll give you how many calories are going to be from protein. You can divide that by 4. That'll give you your grams of protein, and so on with the carbohydrates and the fat, you know. The only difference with the fat is that it's going to be divided by 9 calories per gram to figure out how many grams of fat you need, due to the fact that 1 gram of fat has 9 calories in it.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So, a typical, and I think you mentioned like a typical person, you know, say 200 pounds would basically, you know, if they were trying to lose weight, they look at their lean body weight somewhere around maybe like 175. I can't remember the number that we had, but I can't remember exactly how you got to that number. I was going to ask you to do that again for me, if that's possible.
Oh yeah, if you're going to look for your lean body mass, or you'd have to figure out what your body fat is first of all. And you know, let's say I'm 10% body fat. I weigh 200 pounds. You know, I'm going to take 200, multiply that by 0.2. And then I'm going to get that I have 20 pounds of fat on me, by 0.1, I'm sorry. And I'm going to find out that I have 20 pounds of body fat on me, so therefore I have 180 pounds of lean body mass. So I just take the 200, minus my 20 pounds of body fat, and therefore I have 180 pounds of lean body mass.
Okay.
So that's the way to find out what your lean body mass total is, which would usually take finding out your body fat, which is a little tricky to do at some places, but most gyms have a rough estimate with a machine that sends an electric current through your body that whatever impedes it would be body fat. And those are pretty accurate. They give you at least a number to start with, or you could go do a skin fold or a hydrostatic weighing if you have that available to you.
All right. And that's important only because of the fact that if you're not looking at the lean body weight, then you're also including the fat. And so if you start eating enough calories to support, you know, your regular body weight, then you're actually, you're still overeating. So you want to look at, your lean body weight and only have calories for your lean body weight. I get it.
Exactly. Okay. You're trying to take in, if you're taking in your total calories for every pound you have, then you're going to still be maintaining that body fat that you have. And that's
right.
What we're trying to get rid of, because you can't lose any weight if you're not in a calorie deficit.
Right. Okay. And then we talked a little bit about meal frequency as well, so and the timing of it, in terms of, how often you should eat. Now, although we're saying that this is for weight loss, would that be meal frequency? I'm trying to jump the gun here. After you're done explaining about the meal frequency for weight loss, would that be any different if you're trying to maintain? So I'm going to give you a chance to answer here now.
All right, well, with the meal frequency, this is all where last week I talked about how your body is like a fire. You know, you're not going to put just one giant log on a fire, because it's going to, hopefully ignite a big flame, but then it's steadily going to burn out throughout the day to where it's eventually going to go out. That's how your metabolism works. Instead of putting a big log on your fire, you're going to want to feed your body with small meals throughout the day. That way you have a steady supply of energy to feed your body and your muscles and your brain throughout the day, instead of a big spike of calories and then you almost go into a starvation mode where your body's going to hold on to those calories as body fat because it doesn't know when it's going to get fed again. Whereas if you're taking in a steady flow of calories throughout the day, roughly every 2 to 3 hours, you're going to keep feeding that fire, keep your metabolism roaring real fast, and you're probably not going to get real hungry, which is a thing that if you're not hungry, you don't overeat. So I try never to really let myself get hungry, because I'm going to eat everything in sight then. So those are a couple big reasons why you got to have your meal frequency up. I mean, now to go on to talk about for maintaining, you can actually almost get away with maybe not eating as frequent, but it's still important to do so, but you still got to keep that metabolism going fast so you're able to maintain your body weight and hopefully not add any body fat. And it's just healthier to keep the small meals throughout the day, but it's extra important when you're trying to burn that body fat to keep eating throughout the day to keep that fire burning.
Okay. You know what? But now you've introduced this analogy or example, like you're saying, like a log. And I didn't really, last week, I didn't go back to ask you this burning, putting a log on the fire. I mean, so what I understand what you're saying when you eat. So I'm thinking that you're saying that because every time you eat, you're actually burning calories. And so now you're just making your body burn more calories. Is that it? Or what is?
Well, yeah. Well, what I'm getting at is, a log is a meal.
That
I'm eating. So if I have only one big log, like a big dinner or a big breakfast, and then I don't put any more little ones on the fire throughout the day, that's eventually going to burn out, and it's going to be kind of a crappy fire after that initial, huge flame from the get-go. So what I'm getting at is, though, when you put the smaller logs, your smaller meals on the fire, you're going to have a better flame, which is your energy levels and your fat burning possibilities throughout the day. You're going to burn more calories by eating the smaller meals versus the one giant one or two giant ones throughout the day.
I got you. Okay, that's what you're saying. Okay. So you're basically cranking up your metabolism, because we're talking about weight loss here. You're cranking up your metabolism, and to do that, you're doing it with the food. The food actually is actually cranking up your metabolism. And if you do it in small amounts, it keeps it going. That's burning. Okay, yes, okay, that's great.
You know, Steve, if you've ever ate something and you feel real hot or something after it, it's because calories are actually just a measurement of heat. So when you take in calories, you're heating your body up in a way. They call it the thermogenic effect of eating. So the more often you eat, the more times your body's going to have to work to actually process those calories through digestion and everything else. So you're burning calories while you're eating, which is pretty crazy for most people to believe. So you got to keep feeding your body and keep everything working right.
Yeah. And you know, I think that's just what you said. It sounds contradictory because we're saying we're talking about weight loss here, in order to lose weight, you've got to eat. And you've got to eat more frequently. You know, I can see where that becomes an issue with a lot of people who are like, wait a minute, you're telling me, you know, to lose weight, you know, I've got to stop eating as much, but now I'm eating more. It just seems like, you know, they've got to, you know, they think that if you eat more, you're going to gain weight, and that's really not the case. As long as you got your right nutrient balance of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats, and you're eating the right number of calories, you're going to lose weight by doing this because, like you said, you know, you're going to keep that flame going. That's, you know, well, I tell you, that's really how it works for playing the diet. I mean, that's what I've done over the years. So the next question would be, like, we're going to start with today, is, and you know, going to wrap over into it is the exercises. So now, Keith, you had said before, you know, the diet is about 70 to 80% of losing weight. We're going to talk about exercises today. What percentage would you say that has on actually losing weight?
I'd probably say the exercise is about the next 10% or so.
Okay.
You know, most people would go, well, what the hell? We only got 90% or 80%. But, you know, exercise is important, and it's a catalyst for burning fat and adding muscle and getting that toned beach body that everybody wants. But it's not everything. But exercise selection and frequency are major things that are going to play a role in your reaching that 100% that you're striving for towards achieving that perfect body.
Okay. And, you know, I get this asked all the time, but me, you know, they're saying, well, okay, if diet, you know, if I can get away with just, you know, going on a diet, why would I exercise? And, you know, and so what you just said is a good reason. But now I'm thinking, I am an advocate of weight resistance, you know, because there's so many benefits to it. So I'm thinking, you know, if you build muscle, and I'm not talking Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm just saying build muscle, you know, you're going to have a better fat-burning capability, and, you know, in order to maintain, you know, so that you don't have to, you know, keep going through binges all the time, you know, where you're dieting and, you know, off-dieting and so on and so forth. So, I'm just a proponent of the whole thing.
Well, Steve, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. The more muscle you have, the faster metabolism is going to be. And if you've ever seen people who've lost a lot of weight through just a diet, their body really doesn't have that toned, muscular, lean look. It's more of just a kind of a skinny fat is what I refer to it as. You know, it's somebody who could weigh less than you, but they don't look as good because their composition of body fat could still be high because they could have lost a lot of lean body mass, water, and not as much fat as you, the participant who was doing a resistance training program at the same time.
Okay. So let's talk about that. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, still here, I'm sorry. The actual exercises that you incorporate in order to do weight loss, in order to achieve weight loss, I should say, is that going to be different than you know, because everybody likes, you know, different types of exercises. I mean, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. You know, they got the prancercise, you got guys are just doing deep breathing. Some people like yoga, some like, you know, I mean, so, and like I said, I'm an advocate for weight resistance. Does the exercises that you choose, okay, do they matter when it comes to weight loss?
Yeah, of course they matter, Steve, because some exercises are going to burn more calories by doing them, and also usually those exercises that involve larger body parts such as your legs, your back, those exercises are going to burn more calories throughout the day. So when you're squatting, you're burning a lot more calories than you would while you're doing a bicep curl or a tricep pushdown. Those exercises are isolation exercises, the last two I discussed, the pushdown and the curl, whereas a squat, a deadlift, a bench press, where you're working multiple muscles from multiple joints, you're going to be burning more calories purely just because you're working more muscles and it's harder.
Okay.
And with most weight loss programs that I advocate, or really any program, you should be doing those multi-joint hard movements like the squats, the deadlifts, the bench press, the shoulder presses, those things that burn a lot of calories and build a lot of muscle at the same time.
Okay. Well, then, I mean, so, yeah. I mean, everybody's an individual, so you're going to have, you know, different body types. You know, male, female, you know, big, tall, short. How would you proceed? I mean, I think that's where we're going here now. We just want to look at, you know, some of the exercises. I mean, we're not going to be able to, go through the whole, whole gamut for everybody. But just in general, you know, let's start with the ladies first. You know, you have a lady. She's a little overweight here, maybe 15, 20 pounds overweight. Okay, and she's trying to lose weight, okay, and she wants to come in, and now she's convinced that, now she wants to do resistance training. I mean, what would you prescribe for her?
All right, well, Steve, first of all, I would take our young lady, and I'd find out if she had any limitations as far as if she had any knee issues, shoulder issues, back problems, things along those lines before I prescribed any certain sort of exercise. But if she was a healthy person, I would figure out how many days a week she's going to the gym, first of all. Now, let's say hypothetically she's a mom, she's busy, she works, she's got to take her kids to soccer practice, baseball, so she's running around, doesn't have that much time. She can make it to the gym 3 times a week for resistance training. I'd probably advocate a full-body routine those 3 days a week on non-consecutive days. Those exercises would also mainly consist of the multi-joint movements that I was discussing,
okay.
Such as for your legs, I would have her doing either a squat or a leg press, along with, maybe a stiff-legged deadlift or a lying leg curl for the hamstrings. And then usually what I do from there is I work biggest to smallest, and I usually do all lower and then all upper together. And I'd probably have her do about 1 or 2 exercises per body part, mainly focusing on those multi-joint movements, such as for your back, a bent over row or a lat pull down, working from the shoulder and, the elbow joints. Or I would advocate, for the chest, a incline dumbbell press. For the shoulders, definitely a shoulder press. And you'll notice my theme here is we're trying to burn a lot of calories through our exercise choices.
Okay. How long would this session last?
That all depends on how much time our client has. Let's say she's got an hour. Well, maybe I'll let her have 3 sets instead of 2. Let's say Mary, hypothetically, is her name. She's only got half hour to lift weights. I'm going to have her hopefully do 2 sets of everything, and she's moving. No more than 30 seconds to a minute of break in between, which might limit her strength gain, but we're really mainly in there trying to burn calories and work hard. So 2 sets. About, 10 to 20 reps per set and just moving. No long 5-minute breaks talking to everybody else at the water,
okay.
Water fountain and so on.
Right. Okay. And, okay, so that's for your typical mom. Okay, how about a guy?
Let's say I have a guy, a busy businessman who's healthy. You know, a lot of people think you got to train women with resistance training different than you would a male. I couldn't really disagree with that more. We're all humans. We all have very similar parts. And therefore, I train them quite the same. You know, women probably want to focus on their legs a little bit more than men or vice versa. But what works for a male works for a female. So I'd have them doing the same thing. Steve, squatting, deadlifting, bench pressing, you know, doing lat pull downs and bent over rows, T-bar rows, shoulder presses, and so on. So that's a misconception that a lot of people have, is that you have to train a male or female differently. We're all, you know, human beings, and we're built the same. So why would I do something different than a girl would?
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Now, during the training, you know, one of the things that, you know, athletes have come to do instinctively to help them achieve gains is what they call the mind-muscle connection, you know. And what I see for most people is that they walk in to the gym and they perform the exercises, but they're just going through the routine. You know what I'm saying? It's in order for them to get through the whole routine, they say, oh, I just got to do this, you know, 10 times, do this 5 times, do this 3 times, and then, boom, I'm out the door, you know. And that's kind of the way they look at it. But in order to achieve what they want, I mean, I believe they should stop and slow down and think about what they're actually doing. I mean, you know, if they're working on a bicep curl, they should be able to feel, you know, the pump inside their, you know, inside their arms. Or if they're doing squats and if, you know, they're doing them properly, you know, they should be able to feel them inside their legs and their buttocks. I mean, so what do you do in order to help them, you know, prepare their mind for that?
Well, usually I try to explain the function of the muscle. A lot of people seem to understand better how to perform an exercise or why the chest does this or that. If I explain, you know, like for instance, the tricep is there to extend the elbow. So when they're doing a pushdown, if they got those elbows locked close to their body, they can really feel and understand that if I push this straight down, my tricep is the muscle that's doing their work. Now, if they're just going, you know, herky-jerky, using their shoulders, everything, you know, bending over, you're practically jumping up and down, which I've seen some very interesting things at the gym.
Yeah.
They're just going through the motions is what I would call it. Like you said, I got to do this, 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 this. And then you'll ask these people, well, where do you feel it at? And they'll go, oh, I don't feel it anywhere. Or I'm feeling it in my wrist. I'm feeling it in my forearm. Where they're actually not feeling the muscle they're trying to work at all. So if I have a client, a friend, or even myself, I try to imagine how that muscle works and put, like the saying goes, put my mind in there and use it to operate that muscle, which is how we work anyway. You know,
right.
We're sending those signals from our brain to the muscle, and that's how it goes. But I really advocate, you know, asking, where do you feel it at? Maybe we could do this. Pull your elbows back, you know, keep your chest up. These are things that can help cue people to properly perform an exercise to eventually attain that mind-muscle connection.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, and, you know, the younger you are, the easier it is to see that you're actually performing the right, you know, you're actually performing the exercise correctly, and then there's a pump point, because you're going to get a little flushed, you know, easily. But, you know, the older you get, you don't really, that flush doesn't always manifest itself all the way to the surface of the skin. So you're not going to get as red as you would be, you know, when you're younger. So do you do anything to touch them to see or have them feel themselves somehow so that they can understand, you know, exactly, you know, where where the blood is supposed to be flowing at the time that they're actually doing the movement, or are they just doing the movement?
Oh, with touching and feeling, and a lot of people get something out of that. If a client's comfortable with me touching their arm or leg, I'll do it myself, or a lot of times I'll flex my muscles to show them how it works, you know, as far as, you know, with this leg curl, this is why the hamstring's working, because, you know, I have a very good mind-muscle connection, so if I can advocate to them how to do it, then they're going to get it. And a lot of people can understand if you feel, oh, that's how the chest works, then they're going to understand that that's why this exercise is working, that and what they could do, you know, pull the shoulder blades back, get the chest up past the front delt, therefore we're working the chest more, and immediately people are going to feel more blood flow into that chest.
Right. Okay. Yeah, you know, I think that's always been the case, is that, you know, the people that you can, you know, that actually get a lot out of the exercise are the ones that have the mind-muscle connection. And the ones that don't, you know, they don't get anything. I mean, they're just going through the motions. And I think there has got to be something said for that. You know, you have to be able to at least concentrate on what you're supposed to be doing and try to feel what you're supposed to be doing. So, you know, I know a lot of times I see people in the gym and they're talking through the whole thing. So I'm thinking, if they're talking, then their mind is on what they're talking about and not what they're doing. You know, so it becomes, I mean, I don't know how they achieve anything. But, you know, I guess some exercise is better than nothing. But the thing is that, like you said, if you're doing particular exercises, okay, in order to achieve, you know, weight loss, you know, you don't want to lose that time. You know, if it's a half an hour or an hour or whatever, you really don't want to lose that time. So, you know, the next point here that I want to bring up is about the exercise journal. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm thinking, you know, anytime you got a plan, you've got a set routine out to say, okay, I do this, and then next week, you know, I can see where I was and what I'm doing, so if I'm increasing, decreasing, or whatever. Now, you described a couple of programs, you know, based on, you know, people's time schedules. So how do you fit that in? Do you use a journal or no?
I personally do not use a journal myself due to the fact that I've been training for quite some time, but I think a journal is very important for people just starting out in the weight room. For one thing, you know, you go into a gym such as the one that I work at, like Omni in Schererville, and it's huge. I mean, there's tons of equipment, there's tons of things you can play around on, but you'll waste half your time looking around for this. Oh, maybe I should do that. If I know I'm doing a legs day, I can go straight to the leg press or straight to the squat rack and get my workout started, because that's what I have in my journal for that day. You know, if I have some sort of plan of attack going into the gym, which everyone should have every day, I can write down the weights that I lifted for a certain amount of reps, and hopefully next time try to come in and beat that.
Okay, yeah, and that's what I was thinking. So how would, you know, so if they don't use a journal, they really don't know, you know, they really don't know how they're progressing, you know, or what to do next. So, and again, this is all about planning the exercises. So if they don't come up with a plan to say, okay, these are the exercises I'm going to use for these particular body parts, and I'm going to do this, you know, when I get into the gym, and then next week I'll see if you know, maybe I should add more exercises or add more weight or whatever, because now, you know, they got to be able to judge. And again, it's that mind-body connection. They got to know, okay, this is starting to feel light. So now if I want the same amount of intensity that I had before, maybe I'm going to have to add weight. Or if I can't add the weight, maybe I can do more exercises. Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm saying. So I'm thinking, yeah, the journal's got to be something that they must use, especially if they haven't, if they're not used to doing any type of exercise. So that's a big point. You know what? We're coming up on a break here, and I think we covered a lot of material for actually some of the exercises with weights and so forth. I'm going to, when we come back off a break, I'm going to ask that maybe if we can put in some other exercises, you know, outside of resistance training, which is going to give us some of the same, which will help us achieve some of the same goals, you know. So maybe you can think of those when we come back. So we'll be back in about, we'll be back off a break. Thanks.
Bring the action.
When you hear this in the club, you're gonna turn the shit up. You're gonna turn the shit up. You're gonna turn the shit up. When we up in the club, all eyes on us. All eyes on us. All eyes on us. See the boys in the club, they're watching us. They're watching us. They're watching us. Everybody in the club, all eyes on us. All eyes on us. All eyes on us.
I wanna scream and shout and let it all out. And scream and shout and let it out. We saying oh, we are, oh, we are, oh, we are. Oh. We saying oh, we are, oh, we are, oh, we are. Oh. I wanna scream and shout and let it all out. And scream and shout and let it out. We saying oh, we are, oh, we are, oh, we are. Oh.
You are now rocking with Will.i.am and
Britney, bitch.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Bring the action.
Rock and roll, everybody, let's lose control. All the bottom, we let it go. Going fast, we ain't going slow. No, no. Hear the beat, now let's hit the flow. Drink it up and then drink some more. Light it up and let's let it blow, blow, blow. Hey, yo, rock it out, rock it now. If you know what we talking about, burn it up and burn down the house, house. Hey, yo, turn it up and don't turn it down. Here we gon' shake the ground. Cause everywhere that we go, we
bring the action.
When you hear this in the club, you're gonna turn the shit up. You're gonna turn the shit up. You're gonna turn the shit up. When we up in the club, all eyes on us. All eyes on us. All eyes on us.
You see them girls in the club, they looking at us. They looking at us. They looking at us.
Everybody in the club, all eyes on us. All eyes on us. All eyes on us.
I wanna scream and shout and let it all out. And scream and shout and let it out. We saying oh, we are, oh, we are, oh, we are. Oh. We saying oh, we are, oh, we are, oh, we are. Oh. I wanna scream and shout and let it all out. And scream and shout and let it out. We saying oh, we are, oh, we are, oh, we are. Oh.
You are now rocking with Will.i.am and
Britney, bitch.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Hi, this is Steve Lewis for Zone In. Welcome back. Today's guest is Mr. Keith Johnson from Sherrillville, Indiana, and we are in part number three, discussing planning the exercises for weight loss. We just kind of wrapped up on before the break about, you know, what exercises to choose, men, women, so on and so forth, and then how to incorporate them into a weight loss plan. Now, we talked primarily about weight resistance training, okay? I'm going to ask Keith about another method of training, which is also good for, you know, toning your body through weight loss. That's, I believe it's plyometrics. Is that right, Keith?
That is right. Steve, you're on to something. Plyometrics is typically like jump training, they refer to it, usually with a lot of explosive type of movements. There's some good pros and cons to plyometric training. And I'll start with the pros. For one thing, it burns a lot of calories. I mean, you're very explosive. You're using almost your maximum output while doing almost an aerobic type of exercise, you know, split squat jumps. You know, those are exercises that you're going to burn a lot of calories with by just the jumping up and down like that for a minute straight or 30 seconds or 45 or jumping onto a box from, you know, 3 feet under, you know, below it. That's the number one for me, is that it's explosive training that burns a lot of calories, and it's great with athletes. If you get a healthy athlete who, you know, is training for a sport, this can all simulate what they're going to face during some of their games. You know, this is going to help a basketball player jump higher or a soccer player run faster and be more agile. Those are the aspects of plyometrics that I really enjoy and use with some of my clients. The problems with plyometrics for our older clientele or some of our injured clients is that it's very rough on the joints and that it can lead to some injuries. So if you got bad knees or ankles or something, I would probably not suggest plyometric training for them. But other than that, for your average person, it's great to add into a good resistance training program, for the reason that it's also different. You know, especially I find with my female clients is that they want different, you know. I don't want to do squats again with a bar. I don't want to, you know, do lunges. But, you know, if you give them the plyometrics, you're in a way tricking them not into exercising differently and harder, but they're going to enjoy it. They're going to be like, you know, that was really fun doing those jumps and bouncing up and down. You know, it makes people feel like an athlete again. Oh, I used to do these back in high school or something. So it's good. It's a good change of pace for most people.
Now, can the resistance training that's being done, can that help them in the plyometrics or vice versa? I mean, is there somehow...
Yes, they both complement each other very well, Steve. As far as, you know, if I'm squatting, you know, and I've been doing box jumps or something, my explosiveness out of the bucket of a squat is going to be great. You know, I'm going to have a lot more power going upwards. And then now that my quads, glutes, and hamstrings are getting stronger from the weight I'm lifting, I'm going to be able to jump higher, and my box jumps are going to be better. Therefore, you know, the two go hand in hand in a way. You know, I'm doing the plyometrics for the real fast power movements, and then I'm going to do my resistance to help strengthen those muscles.
So what you're saying, that is there a medium, is there a middle of the road kind of thing for plyometrics, whereby, you know, you can do some of it, but it's not the full blown version? Like, you know, like I've seen some of these videos on the internet where, you know, guys are jumping up over, you know, six boxes or something like that. But I mean, is there something whereby, you know, just something, it's like a regular step that you would find in a step aerobics class. Is there something where you can just jump on top of it and then come down, or you just step up on top of it and come down?
You can do those two right there. That's great for your beginning trainee. Or, you know, a lot of gyms actually nowadays have, you know, boxes that are made specifically for plyometric activities. So that's great if your gym has them, but if you're at the park, you can do plyometrics. You know, as long as you got a sturdy, you know, bench, you can hop right up onto that. That's the nice aspect of plyometric training also, is that you can do it about anywhere. You can be outside, you can be inside, you can be, you know, at the gym, at the park, you know, at your baseball field, something like that, to perform these activities, as long as you have a sturdy, solid base to jump onto, or a solid ground to be bouncing around on.
Okay. Yeah, you know, because I'm sorry.
No, continue on, Steve.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, you know, I've seen this type of training. I haven't really done anything, you know, like it since I was actually playing ball. So, but the thing is that I do notice or can see the benefit to it. So, it's something that, you know, I think should be considered. The only thing, like you said, is that the fact that, you know, you got to look at yourself in terms of, you know, what you're, you know, how well you're going to be able to, you know, withstand all the pressure on your joints. But, I thought it was something of interest, definitely. Now, is there anything else that you would prescribe outside of that? I mean, resistance training and plyometrics?
You know, let's say this goes hand, this is, you know, again, resistance training, but if you're in a hurry, or, you know, I could probably go all day talking about advanced training principles like drop sets or supersets. These are all, you know, types of training principles that can intensify your workout. But, you know, one basic aspect of training could be like a circuit training. You know, this was something that's popularized by the Nautilus equipment, you know. And I believe the owner of Nautilus passed away. His name was Arthur Ray, I think. I'm not, don't quote me on that. But he created that equipment, and it was set up in a circle where you can complete it in about a half an hour, and you work your body completely. You know, one thing that's nice about that is you can get a lot of work done in a short period of time. So the circuit training could be a good resistance training for somebody who is not able to afford a trainer or doesn't feel comfortable working with free weights because they're able to be on machines the whole time.
Okay.
And then, you know, I'll just go into what a drop set is. You know, a drop set or a strip set or a burnout is when you start with a certain weight, you do as many as you can, and then you just keep lightening the weight so you can keep getting more reps in and therefore pumping the muscle full of blood and pushing your body past what it's used to doing. I could talk about advanced principles for a whole hour, but that's probably my favorite technique right there with resistance training.
Yeah, you know, I've seen, you know, different ones actually try some of the different methods, and it looks like it's working for them. So that's what I was going to ask you about it. But okay, so yeah, and we'll come back for another show and talk more about that. But very interesting. But now I got to bring up the subject of cardio, okay? Because I don't think you can talk about weight loss without cardio, and so I'm just going to let you explain it right here.
All right. Well, there's a couple different types of cardiovascular training you can do. Now, there's steady state cardio, which is, you know, you're running or being on the elliptical or the step mill for at approximately, let's say, 50 to 70% of your heart rate maximum. And, you know, this is where you're working hard consistently for roughly 30 minutes to an hour. This is the cardio that was really advocated to me as a bodybuilder when I first started because, you know, it's not too intense where you're going to burn up muscle. You know, there's these supposed heart burning ranges, you know, fat burning heart ranges, you know, like 120 to 140 is using, you know, fat as energy, 140, 160 is, you know, using carbohydrates. This is supposed to keep you from using, you know, muscle as energy.
Right.
I don't necessarily believe that those are truly the way you should do them, but steady state cardio is a great way to be on a piece of equipment for about 30 to 60 minutes, and it burns a lot of calories without super tiring yourself out. Runners are do pretty much steady state cardio. All the craze right now, which I'm a big fan of, is interval cardio. This is where you're going, you know, balls out for roughly 30 seconds to a minute, and then you're going to go at a consistent pace for about a minute, you know, just like a cool down almost. Like, so you're going hard as you can, and then it's like a recovery minute. And then once, you know, you hit that new minute, you're going as hard as you can to where you're about to, you know, fall off the treadmill or fall over because you're going so hard, is the interval cardio. And I think it's great because, you know, it burns about as many calories as the steady state does in an hour and 25 minutes. And studies have shown that your body burns more calories after doing interval cardio than the steady state.
Okay. Well, so, if okay, so let's, I'm trying to think. Now, is that for any piece of equipment considered cardio equipment, or what, you know, what selection of equipment are you thinking about, other than the treadmill maybe?
There's, you know, ellipticals, step mills, there's new steps, there's anything that's going to get your heart rate up and working.
Okay.
You know, I'm a big fan of the step mill. You know, I think ellipticals and treadmills, those are probably your big three. And then you got recumbent bikes, stand-up bikes, you know, spin class. Those are all cardiovascular activities that are going to help you burn the body fat and exercise your heart at the same time.
But if you're getting your heart rate up to a certain point, what's the difference using a different machine?
Well, for one thing, your body gets accustomed to a certain thing. So the more you do the elliptical, the better you're going to get at it. And then eventually your body doesn't have to work as hard to do the same output that it did when it was dying 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And therefore you need to switch it up and keep things fresh so your body's gassing and not as efficient as you would like it to be at a certain exercise, because it's probably going to have to work harder to complete that exercise.
Okay.
Certain machines, I think, work better. You know, I think the step mill is the hardest one because you're not only working your heart, but your quads, your hamstrings, your glutes are all working really hard while you're stepping up and down on those stairs. And that's the main reason why you switch up the pieces of cardio equipment you use.
Okay. Well, so how long should the cardio session last?
No, you know, for steady state cardio, Steve, I would advocate at least a half hour. Everybody says, you know, you don't get into the fat burning zone until 20 minutes into your cardio. So if that's true, and I tend to agree with it, you know, if you're only doing 20 minutes, you're just starting to burn body fat when you're quitting. So
right.
I mean, that seems kind of counterproductive to me. So 30 to 60 minutes, I think, is the best way to do the steady state cardio. Anything more than 60 minutes, and you're probably not working as hard, and your body's probably dipping into glycogen and muscle for energy instead of using that body fat that we want to use. Now, for the high-intensity cardio or the interval training, I would suggest anywhere from roughly 15 to 30 minutes there. Anything more than that, you're probably not really working as hard as you should be. And anything less than 15 seems, you know, a little bit like a waste of time, you know, but anything's better than nothing.
Okay. So, now, you were saying for high intensity, would that be like sprints? Or
sprints. That's a great example.
Okay.
Sprint.
All right.
Or, you know, you're on the elliptical and you're moving so fast it looks like your leg, the skis are going to shoot off the machine, you know. You should be working so hard that you feel as though you physically cannot go any faster or harder.
Okay.
That is what a high-intensity interval should be.
Okay. So now, does that mean, is that with a, because now you can also, on these machines, you can change the resistance. So should you be at a high resistance and do that? Should you be at a low resistance and go all out? You know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, like,
made a new interval right there, Steve. I mean, you created it yourself. You did it yourself. You know, one day you can do intervals where you're on a higher resistance. You can do intervals where you're going faster at a lower resistance. So it all depends on, you know, switching it up on that day.
Okay.
That's how I feel about that.
All right.
The main thing is you're just going out as hard as you can.
Okay. So now let's just, we're talking about exercising here, and we're talking about for weight loss. So, when you're training your clients and they come in, they've only got a half an hour, and you get them over to the gym part where they're doing resistance training. So do you, like, split it 15 minutes of resistance training, and then you come over and give them 15 minutes of cardio, or how do you, or you do it different days, or how do you do that?
Well, you know, with some of my clients, we mix cardiovascular training in with the resistance, you know, maybe doing jumping jacks, jumping rope, running around the track, or something just to keep the heart rate up while they're resting their muscles. But most of my clients do cardio on their own. I mean,
Okay. You're
paying good money. You know, if you're going to see me for a half hour, you probably should advocate an hour for yourself to do cardio on your own. You know, you don't need me to be there to hold your hand. I could show you once or twice, but then you need to do it on your own. I think cardiovascular training is something that most people can attain or achieve on their own.
Okay. Well, I mean, so, you know, that's going to lead into the question here. Okay, so we're talking about the exercises. All right, so now with the resistance training and maybe even plyometrics even added in there or something else, you know, you said so some people it may be 3 days a week for half an hour at each session, and that depends on their schedule. So now, is that enough, or do they have to do the cardio, or should they do the cardio as well and do the cardio on their own?
you know, it's important when, especially when you're trying to lose fat, to do the cardio, but you don't have to do it every day. I would advocate at least 5 days of cardio for most of my clients who are looking to lose weight. Now, if you have to do it on the same day you're doing resistance training, then that's the way it's going to be. But if you can make it in on your own because you only have a half hour to work out and resistance training is more important, then you need to come in on your own and do your cardiovascular training at a later time or date or outside with the dog or with your kids, something like that.
That's right. Okay. Well, so I think that's the question I'm trying to get to. Okay, I know how much resistance training we're supposed to do, at least 30 minutes, 3 days a week. Okay, and if we can do more, we can do more. What about the cardio? Okay, because now I'm at an hour and a half with the resistance training, and I'm trying to lose weight. How much more cardio do I have to add in order to, you know, achieve my weight loss goal?
You know, I'd start out with probably doing, you know, at least 3 days of cardio for those 30 minutes along with the weight training sessions, and go from there. You know, as I start to maybe stall on my weight loss goals, I could add in another day of cardio, and then I'll be burning that much more calories throughout the week. So eventually you might be doing 6 days of cardio.
Okay. All right. Okay. But in 6 days of cardio at 30 minutes or
do we 30 minutes, minutes to an hour, depending on the type of cardio that you're going
to
be doing.
30 minutes to an hour. Okay, so that's quite a bit. Okay, and that's going to depend on, you know, how fast you want it off, or how much you're actually progressing throughout this throughout the time period.
That's exactly.
Okay. Okay, I guess. Okay. Ah, boy, I'm going to tell you. You know, really, we've just touched the surface with a lot of this stuff. So we'll probably come back in later shows and, you know, and, you know, examine some things, you know, a little bit more in depth. But, man, I really appreciate that. You know, now, and to sum it up, we're basically saying, you know, the exercises, you're going to have to, you know, select something that is, that's going to involve multiple joints, as you said, and basically, perform some type of resistance training with them so that, you know, your body will, in this case, start to tone up and build muscle. And then now we're saying with the cardio, again, it's another hour and a half a week at 30 minutes per session. So that's about, well, we're talking about, if you're going to do weight loss, you know, you're going to be looking at about 3 hours a week. You know, got to commit to about 3 hours a week in order to achieve your goals. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's a good, I'd say that's a good rough estimate to, you know, say what you need to apply towards, you know, reaching your fitness goals. And when you look at it, you know, 3 hours might sound like a lot, but, you know, think how many times, you know, how many hours you spend at work or watching TV. If you just, you know, sacrifice a little bit of TV time every day, those 3 hours will seem like nothing.
That's great. Okay, you're right. I agree. You got to do it, and it's not that much considering what the rest of your life holds. That's right. Okay, you know what? That's about it for today. Keith, man, it's been great. I really appreciate you sharing all this knowledge with us. We won't be back next week for part four. Actually, we're going to rebroadcast today, but we'll be back the following week. And in that week, we will talk about supplementation. So so now we've had diet, exercise, and then in the following week, we'll talk about supplementation. So that's our show for this week. Our guest, Mr. Keith Johnson from Schererville, Indiana, personal trainer. Thank you, Keith.
Thank you, Steve, for having me again. I appreciate it.
Okay. See you next week, everybody.
You wanna take off. You wanna take off. You wanna take off. Warm me up in the